Journalist Edward Girardet has traveled to Afghanistan more than 40 times over the last 20 years, most recently in September for National Geographic magazine. His article, Eyewitness Afghanistan, appears in the December issue. In it, he recounts meeting the men who would assassinate opposition leader Ahmad Shah Massoud shortly before September 11th. And he also describes an early encounter with Osama bin Laden. Mr. Girardet says that whether or not coalitions can come together to create a workable government in Afghanistan is dependent on several factors.
Can the very fragile Northern Alliance hold together? Will they be willing to bring in Pashtuns, who constituted the majority of the Taliban, which is essential for the future of Afghanistan? Unfortunately, all the previous leaders, such as Ahmad Shah Massoud, who was assassinated on September 9th, also Abdul Haq, who was executed last month, these were leaders who didn't necessarily have a nationwide following, but certainly had the possibility of developing one and bringing in other ethnic groups, including the Pashtuns. Right now, I do not see a single leader emerging. So I think one has to realize that, you know, it's not all done yet, and that the Northern Alliance could collapse. And the UN, I think, has really got to get in extremely quickly into Kabul, within days as opposed to weeks, in order to try and help set up an administration. But it's got to move very, very quickly.
The Ahmad Shah Massoud that you describe in your piece in National Geographic is a very appealing guy.
Yes, I first came across him in 1981. I'd heard that there was this rather unusual commander in the Panjshir Valley. Unusual because he was not just a military commander, he was also someone who cared about the civilian populations. And I actually met Massoud, we talked. He didn't quite know who I was. I think he suspected that I was a CIA spy or something. I was actually the first American journalist he'd seen. And he then asked that I help him contact the Americans. Of course, the Americans were not interested at the time in meeting someone like Massoud. But the thing is that he was a brilliant strategist, guerrilla fighter. He did a lot of reading. He was also a reader of poetry, of Persian poetry. And he always insisted that the schools continue as mixed schools with boys and girls, that there would be also clinics for the local populations. And I think he always combined the two. So he had a much broader vision than most Afghan commanders. And I think it was actually a tragic loss for Afghanistan.
I'm touched by what he told you he wanted to do when the war was over.
Yes, it was one of those occasions where you're just sitting there talking and not really interviewing. And I said, well, what do you want to do? And he said, you know, read. I want to read Persian poetry, and I want to be in a place where there are no goddamn mountains.
You met the men who apparently were responsible for his assassination.
Yes, I'd actually sent a message to Massoud when I got to the north and said, you know, I'd like to sit down and talk with you. And he sent back a message saying, come to Hoja Bahuddin, which is one of his headquarters on the border with Tajikistan. And we came to the government guest house, and, you know, that was before the September 11th bombings, of course. And there were like five journalists there, including two Arabs. And I found it slightly unusual that there were Arab journalists with the Northern Alliance. But then I thought, great, you know, they're interested. And I spoke with them in French. They said they were Moroccan. They said they represented a Middle Eastern television network. They wouldn't say which one. They were not very forthcoming, and they lived in the room next door. So for 3 nights, as my wife said, you know, I can't believe you spent 3 nights with these people. And, you know, several days later when I left, because there was too much dust for Massoud's helicopter to land because of the drought, and I was just going to catch up with him later, but then we heard that two Arabs posing as journalists had killed Massoud. And it was clear that it was an outside operation. Had the Taliban done that, first of all, I think it would not have been suicidal. Afghans are not suicidal types. They would have maybe tried to shoot him and then run away. They would not have blown themselves up as one of them did there. And the other one was wounded, eventually shot by the Mujahideen, by the Northern Alliance. But it was something which was very well planned. They were recommended by a group in London to the Mujahideen, or to the Northern Alliance. And of course, again, as with many of the Afghan groups, not very well organized on the ground, not very security conscious. They let them come in. They didn't check them. I mean, they let me come in because I've known these people for a long time. There was no problem there. But there were no real security checks about any journalists that they did not know.
Osama bin Laden once threatened to kill you, didn't he?
Yes, I came across him unwittingly toward the end of the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan in February 1989. And I was actually on the front lines of Jalalabad with a group of Afghan guerrillas. And I came across about 60 Arabs, Saudis, Yemenis, Algerians. And one particularly tall one, obviously the commander, came up to me and demanded to know what I was doing there. And I replied that I was a guest in this country just as he was, which obviously did not really appeal to him. And then he said, you know, what are you doing here? This is a jihad. You're nothing but an infidel. Get out. And then I had to point out, well, actually, people like myself, journalists such as myself, have been covering the war since the beginning of the Soviet occupation in 1979-80, as well as a lot of the aid agencies, including many women doctors. And I said, where were you? You're here now toward the end of the Soviet occupation, but you were not there in the beginning. And this, you know, we then had a very, very heated debate, to put it mildly, for about 45 minutes. He then told me, if I see you again, I'll kill you. And of course, a week later, I went back for my newspaper, but also for a television documentary. And the Afghans I was with insisted on returning to the front line. I said, look, there are these rather crazy Arabs there. I'm not that keen on going back. But they said, no, this is Afghanistan, and these Arabs have nothing to tell us. So we went back in the midst of a very heavy shelling by the still Afghan government, communist government forces. And we came across the Arabs who screamed at us, including this tall Arab again, who I did not have a clue who he was. And, you know, saying, why have you come back? They pulled their guns on us, and the Afghans with us pulled their guns on them. And it was an extremely, very touchy situation. The shells of the government were coming nearer and nearer. And finally, the Afghan commander stepped in between and said, stop, this is not good for Islam. And we sort of backed away, leapt into a vehicle, and just as we got into the vehicle, two mortars crashed on both sides, and we managed to get out.
Well, I can see where the two of you got off on the wrong foot, as it were. But I wonder if over the years you've told yourself that there was anything significant in that encounter that we ought to keep in mind now.
What needs to be borne in mind is that the ones who were there in the late 1980s, Arabs fighting with the Mujahideen, including bin Laden, were rank amateurs. They were not trained properly. They were testing the waters, you might say, of a jihad, of a holy war. The ones who came back in the mid-late 1990s were much better trained. They also had a much stronger network, more money. One of bin Laden's strengths, of course, was raising money as opposed to actually giving money himself. He basically blackmailed a lot of Saudi businessmen. And they're very much hardliners. And of course, his group then began to take over the military operations of the Taliban. The Taliban were really never that well organized, which is typical of a lot of Afghan groups. I mean, nothing new there. But they are hardline. I think one has to remember that the Arabs or the militants, the Islamic Foreign Legion per se, in Afghanistan today, consists of Chechens, it consists of very, very radical Uzbeks, it consists of, you know, militants from Indonesia, from Algeria, and they may lose out in Afghanistan today or tomorrow, but a lot of them have already left the country, a lot of them may leave the country, and these are people who will become very, very difficult to control elsewhere. So I think, you know, we have to be very realistic about the situation. The collapse of the Taliban does not mean the collapse of terrorism. Controlling the cities does not mean controlling the country. And, you know, I don't think the situation has ended. And, of course, a lot will depend on what happens with the Northern Alliance, whether it, too, will collapse or fractionalize into you know, smaller groups fighting against mm-hmm. each other, which is a major concern of a lot of the Kabul population today.
Mr. Girardet, a question predicated on mm-hmm. your knowledge of the geography of Afghanistan over the past 20 years. We now, as we approach this weekend, are confronting a strategic situation where the forces of the Taliban seem to be in retreat there. Certainly, can't speak for American and British intelligence, but certainly seems to be a quandary as to Osama bin Laden's location. Is there a place in the interior or somewhere in Afghanistan where they can flee and be successful at it?
Possibly. The eastern areas of Afghanistan are very mountainous or hilly in some areas, very, very difficult terrain. The Soviets bombed a lot of the guerrilla forces and civilians who supported them during the Soviet war and made very, very little headway. They controlled the towns. They controlled the roads to an extent. They did not control the mountains. Mm-hmm. Now, we hear talk of, you know, huge labyrinths and networks of tunnels. I mean, I'm very skeptical of that. I know that there are perhaps a very small number of elaborate tunnel systems in certain places. But, you know, there are caves which were used by refugees, by the guerrillas, where they placed, you know, weapons and fuel supplies or ammunition. But I don't think there is this huge network of tunnels and caves all around Afghanistan. And I think what the Taliban will do, those who decide to escape into the mountains, these are the tribal areas of Afghanistan, mm-hmm. they will probably mix with the local population, which will pose problems because it means that you cannot go and bomb. You're going to have to send ground troops in there. Mm-hmm. And what remains to be seen is to what extent certain commanders will continue supporting the Taliban, because to come back to the way they operate, commanders will need to respond to the requirements of their own constituencies, their clan or their village or their valley. And if they decide that it is not in their interests to support the Taliban, because you've got to remember that the Taliban really had very, very few military victories during the past 3-4 years. Most of their victories were actually buy-offs of commanders who betrayed their own commanders, and they moved in without fighting. So a lot of the commanders were bought off, but the money supplies are now being stopped. So there will probably be very, very little incentive for a lot of the Pashtun commanders or clan leaders to support the Taliban. So it's to what extent is Bin Laden and company, to what extent can they continue providing incentives that will make it worth their while or worth the while of the local villagers to support them.
But of course, as Afghanis of all tribal groups begin to sense that the Taliban is yesterday's tyrant, are they going to lose support?
I think they will lose support, but there are a lot of other factors which will come into account, and that one is drug trafficking. I mean, one has to realize that these are bonuses that the leaders, the commanders will want to have a finger or a hand or a foot in. This is too lucrative to drop.
Do you think it's credible to believe that Osama bin Laden is still in Afghanistan, or has he already left? Could he get out to Iraq or Libya?
Well, he could very easily cross the border into Pakistan, which is also a tribal area. And in this area, the Pakistani government does not have great control. And that's one of the old traditions of the region. Mm-hmm. So he could be hiding out in the Pakistani side, on the Pakistani side of Afghanistan, of the tribal areas. And it would be extremely easy to be whisked out, you know, through Karachi and elsewhere. This may have happened for all we know. We don't know. I think this has been acknowledged. The American and British intelligence on the ground has been very, very poor. It's improving. I mean, mm-hmm. you cannot get this sort of information from satellites. The ground information is something you need to have people on the ground to provide you. And what the Pakistanis were provided, they have their own agenda, and it proved never to be that reliable. I mean, they will give the information they think you need to have, but it won't be all. So, you know, again, a lot of questions.
Mr. Girardet, thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Journalist Ed Girardet, his article, Eyewitness Afghanistan, appears in the December issue of National Geographic.